the book by Venerable Mary of Agreda called The Mystical City of God. And we are going to see what occurred when Mary was engulfed in the light during the birth of our Savior in Bethlehem and Judea. I'm going to read portions of chapter 4 between pages 303 and 317. The palace which the Supreme King of Kings and the Lord of Lords had chosen for entertaining his eternal and incarnate Son in this world was a most poor and insignificant hut or cave, to which most holy Mary and Joseph betook themselves after they had been denied all hospitality and the most ordinary kindness by their fellow men, as I have described in the foregoing chapter. This place was held in such contempt that though the town of Bethlehem was full of strangers in want of night shelter, none would demean or degrade himself so far as to make use of it for a lodging, for there was none who deemed it suitable or desirable for such a purpose, except the teachers of humility and poverty, Christ our Savior, and his purest mother. The angelic spirits, who like a celestial militia guarded their queen and mistress, formed themselves into cohorts in the manner of court guards in a royal palace. They showed themselves in their visible forms also to Saint Joseph, for on this occasion it was befitting that he should enjoy such a favor. On the one hand, in order to assuage his sorrow by allowing him to behold this poor lodging thus beautified and adorned by their celestial presence, and on the other, in order to enliven and encourage him for the events which the Lord intended to bring about during that night, and in this forsaken place, the great queen and empress, who was already informed of the mystery to be transacted here, set about cleaning with her own hands the cave, which was so soon to serve as a royal throne and sacred mercy seat. For neither did she want to miss this occasion for exercising her humility, nor would she deprive her only begotten Son of the worship and reverence implied by this preparation and cleaning of his temple. Saint Joseph, mindful of the majesty of his heavenly spouse, which, it seemed to him, she was forgetting, hastened to set about cleaning the floor and the corners of the cave. As the holy angels were then present in visible forms, they speedily emulated with each other to join in his work. In the shortest time possible, they had cleansed and set in order that cave, filling it with holy fragrance. Saint Joseph started a fire with the material which he had brought for that purpose. As it was very cold, they sat at the fire in order to get warm. After their supper, they gave thanks to the Lord, as was their custom, leaving Most Holy Mary in the portion of the cave. Saint Joseph retired to a corner of the entrance, where he began to pray. He was immediately visited by the Divine Spirit and felt a most sweet and extraordinary influence, by which he was rapt and elevated into an ecstasy. In it was shown him all that passed during that night in this blessed cave, for he did not return to consciousness until his heavenly spouse called him. Such was the sleep which Saint Joseph enjoyed in that night, more exalted and blessed than that of Adam in paradise. The queen of all creatures was called from her resting place by a loud voice of the Most High, which strongly and sweetly raised her above all created things and caused her to feel new effects of divine power. For this was one of the most singular and admirable ecstasies of her most holy life. Immediately, also, she was filled with new enlightenment and divine influences, such as I have described in other places, until she reached the clear vision of the divinity. The veil fell, and she saw intuitively the Godhead itself in such glory and plenitude of insight as all the capacity of men and angels could not describe or fully understand. All the knowledge of the divinity and humanity of her most holy Son, which she had ever received in former visions, was renewed, and moreover, other secrets of the inexhaustible archives of the bosom of God were revealed to her. The Most Holy Mary remained in this ecstasy and beatific vision for over an hour immediately preceding her divine delivery. At the moment when she issued from it and regained the use of her senses, she felt and saw that the body of the infant God began to move in her virginal womb. This movement not only did not cause any pain or hardship, as happens with the other daughters of Adam and Eve in their childbirths, but filled her with incomparable joy and delight, causing in her soul and in her virginal body such exalted and divine effects that they exceeded all thought of men. Her body became so spiritualized with the beauty of heaven that she seemed no more a human and earthly creature. Her countenance emitted rays of light, like a sun incarnadined, and shone in indescribable earnestness and majesty, all inflamed with fervent love. She was kneeling in the manger, her eyes raised to heaven, her hands joined and folded at her breast, her soul wrapped in the divinity, and she herself was entirely deified. At the end of the beatific rapture and vision of the Mother Ever Virgin, which I have described above, was born the Son of Justice, the only begotten of the Eternal Father, and of Mary most pure, beautiful, refulgent, and immaculate, leaving her untouched in her virginal integrity and purity, and making her more godlike and forever sacred. For he did not divide, but penetrated the virginal chamber as the rays of the sun penetrate the crystal shrine, lighting it up in prismatic beauty. The infant God, therefore, was brought forth from the virginal chamber, unencumbered by any corporeal or material substance foreign to himself, but he came forth glorious and transfigured for the divine and infinite wisdom decreed and ordered that the glory of his most holy Son, of his most holy soul, should in his birth overflow and communicate itself to his body, participating in the gifts of glory in the same way as happened afterwards in his transfiguration on Mount Tabor in the presence of the apostles. It was the will of God that the Most Blessed Virgin should look upon the body of her Son, the God-man, for his first time in a glorified state for two reasons. The one was in order that by this divine vision the most prudent mother should conceive the highest reverence for the majesty of him whom she was to treat as her son, the true God-man. Although she was already informed of his twofold nature, the Lord nevertheless ordained that by ocular demonstration she be filled with new graces corresponding to the greatness of her most holy Son, which was thus manifested to her in a visible manner. The second reason was to reward by this wonder the fidelity and holiness of the Divine Mother, for her most pure and chaste eyes that had turned away from all earthly things for love of her most holy Son were to see him at his very birth in this glory, and thus be rejoiced and rewarded for her loyalty and beautiful love. The sacred evangelist Luke tells us that the Mother Virgin, having brought forth her firstborn son, wrapped him in swathing clothes and placed him in a manger. He does not say that she received him in her arms from her virginal womb, for this did not pertain to the purpose of his narrative. But the two sovereign princes, Saint Michael and Saint Gabriel, were the assistants of the Virgin on this occasion. They stood by at a proper distance in human corporeal forms at the moment when the incarnate Word, penetrating the virginal chamber by divine power, issued forth to the light, and they received him in their hands with ineffable reverence. In the same manner as a priest exhibits the sacred host to the people for adoration, so these two celestial ministers presented to the Divine Mother her glorious and refulgent Son. All this happened in a short space of time. In the same moment in which the holy angels thus presented the divine child to his mother, both son and mother looked upon each other, and in this look she wounded with love the sweet infant, and was at that same time exalted and transformed in him. From the arms of the holy princes, the prince of all the heavens spoke to his holy mother, "Mother, become like unto me, since on this day, for the human existence which thou hast today given me, I will give thee another more exalted existence in grace, assimilating thy existence as a mere creature to the likeness of me, who am God and man." The most prudent mother answered, "Raise me, elevate me, Lord, and I will run after thee in the odor of thy ointments." The words which Most Holy Mary heard from the mouth of her Most Holy Son served to make her understand at the same time the interior acts of his holiest soul united with the divinity, in order that by imitating them she might become like unto him. Holding him in her arms, she thus served as the altar and sanctuary where the 10,000 angels adored in visible human forms their Creator incarnate, and as the Most Blessed Trinity, assisted in an especial manner at the birth of the Word, heaven was, as it were, emptied of its inhabitants, for the whole heavenly court had betaken itself to that blessed cave of Bethlehem and was adoring the Creator in his garb and habit of a pilgrim. And in their concert of praise, the holy angels intoned the new canticle, Gloria in excelsis Deo, et in terra pax hominibus bone voluntatis. In sweetest and sonorous harmony, they repeated it, transfixed in wonder at the new miracles then being fulfilled, and at the unspeakable prudence, grace, humility, and beauty of that tender maiden of 15 years, who had become the worthy trustee and minister of such vast and magnificent sacraments.